Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
And I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Monday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
That's all that really matters. So we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. So glad you're with us. Coming your way, Reed Forgrave is going to join us from CBSSports.com, College Basketball Insider. Reed will drop on by coming up in about 17 minutes from now for a complete bracket breakdown. Also, in the queue this week, we will have Super Dave, Dave Friedman, the voice of the Winthrop Eagles men's basketball team. Winthrop did not make the Field of 68, but he is the oracle of low major basketball. He is the maven of mid-majors, the Lancelot of low majors. We will have Super Dave Friedman join us here on the show tomorrow for full bracketology from him because he really knows the ins and outs of bracket busters. Also, we are efforting this week a couple of voices of the NCAA tournament coverage. We'll have Andrew Catalan coming up, good friend of mine, on a Wednesday show. Also efforting Carter Blackburn, who will also have play-by-play coverage this week of the first and second rounds, really the round of 64 and round of 32 of the NCAA tournament. And tomorrow, confirmed, Ed Reed in studio. How about that? So a lot to get to this week here on the DA. Last night, watching LeBron lose again and having his shot blocked by Mario Hezonja against a disgustingly bad New York Knicks team was kind of sad. And I have a worry right now. I don't know if anybody else has this worry. I'm a big LeBron fan, always have been. And I felt early in his career he was the subject of unfair criticism. I think people wanted to take him down pegs because he was so popular and so famous, because he was supposed to be the chosen one at such an early age that people unrealistically expected him to be Michael Jordan by year five. And they didn't realize that LeBron's game was much different than Michael Jordan's. And so demanding to take the last shot, to me, always seemed like such a silly criticism if he made the right pass, because he was always more of a facilitator than anything. And the fact that he was a facilitator at his size once again proved that he was unlike anything we've ever seen before. He was closer to Magic Johnson than Michael Jordan. And nobody would ever have criticized Magic Johnson for passing outside as he drove the lane or making the right pass to the open man if that man knocked down the shot. In fact, Michael Jordan finally won championships when he decided to do that, when he trusted John Paxton and trusted Steve Kerr to knock down big shots. So early in his career, I always felt as though LeBron was unfairly criticized for not being something that was unrealistic anyway. By going to 8 straight NBA finals, I think finally the tables had turned, and even his harshest critics had begrudgingly given him a lot of respect. And once a player gets later on in his career, people become more wistful, more nostalgic. And when a player becomes vulnerable at the end of his career, it's easier to feel sympathy, compassion, or appreciation for who he is. You know, people hated Kobe Bryant, but once Kobe Bryant did his retirement tour, suddenly it was, wow, oh, well, Kobe, we love Kobe. And this has happened over the course of LeBron's career. His critics have softened, I think, most of them. But this is kind of sad to me now, because I've got a real fear that the LeBron Lakers years are going to be the Michael Jordan Wizards years, are going to be the Emmitt Smith Cardinals years. Because this is just sad. I mean, the Lakers with LeBron, after he had rested for quote-unquote load management, lost to the Knicks. The Knicks are so awful, so bad. There's no way a healthy LeBron, no matter who he has around him, should lose to this Knicks team. The Knicks are trying to lose, and the Lakers can't beat them. And to see LeBron yesterday just keep throwing up brick after brick after brick after brick, missing 11 shots in the fourth quarter. He went 4 of 15 from the field in the fourth. That's the most shots he's ever missed in a quarter, ever. And he did it in the fourth quarter against the Knicks. And then to have Mario Hezonja. That's not even Marco Belletti. Mario Hezonja blocked your final shot. And during the game, being distanced from your team a couple of seats farther away, 3 seats away from anybody else on the team during a timeout. Look, I'm a LeBron fan, but yesterday was ugly. It was sad. And I really do wonder how much he's emotionally checked out on this group of guys. And I wonder if the Lakers will ever put together a winning supporting cast around him. Let's play some audio from LeBron post-game yesterday after the 124-123 loss.
It bothers me in the fact that we didn't close the game out. I mean, being a competitor that I am, and bothers me that I didn't make enough plays down the stretch. It bothers me that I didn't even get a shot up at the hoop. But, you know, of course that stuff bothers me, but I mean, what's the difference between their record and our record? The 2 teams out of the postseason.
Let's go beyond that. Not only is there no difference between where the Lakers are going this year and the Knicks are going, they're both playing for the lottery, but the Lakers currently have a 31-39 record. They're 8 games under 500 right now. That's exactly what they were last year, before LeBron James showed up. Now look, part of this is the injuries to all the other young players has left the Lakers with a skeleton crew. And LeBron doesn't have a lot of supporting cast. But the fact that the Lakers are not even a game better than they were last year with LeBron James, yeah, I think part of this is he's emotionally checked out. I think part of this is he doesn't care. Part of this is simply that he wants the season to be over. And he's just not as engaged as he probably should be. I thought yesterday was just sad. And when I look at the offseason, I mean, let's be honest. Kevin Durant's not going to Los Angeles to play with LeBron James. He's already made that as clear as possible. Okay, that takes him out. Is Kyrie going to go back to play with LeBron? I mean, maybe. Maybe that's why they kissed and made up. But if Kyrie doesn't, I mean, what are we talking about? Is Klay Thompson going to become a Laker? Perhaps, because his dad played there. But what happens if Klay Thompson resigns? I don't think Kawhi Leonard's going there. I think Kawhi, if he wants to go to L.A., I think goes to the Clippers. What happens if this offseason the Celtics then trade for Anthony Davis? Then LeBron's without Kawhi, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Kyrie Irving, and Anthony Davis. Where's the help going to come from? LeBron is no longer at the point in his career where he can drag a carcass of a roster to a finals. That's obvious. He just missed 11 shots yesterday against the Knicks, who play no defense in the fourth quarter. Where's his help going to come from? I mean, they'll have a lottery pick, but the odds are it's not going to be a top 3 or top 4 pick. So the Lakers are going to have to get real creative or swing a major deal. I mean, I don't know what else they can offer to get Anthony Davis in the offseason that they didn't already just offer. I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried that this is going to be, 4 years of what we thought about Willie Mays and the Mets, Emmett Smith and the Cardinals. Now, granted, LeBron's way better than those guys were at that point of their careers. Way better. And I suppose we don't think of Joe Montana as sad on the Chiefs because Joe Montana went to an AFC championship game. But, I mean, what are the odds LeBron has another deep playoff run in him if the Lakers can't supply him with another superstar? I'm not just talking about, like, good players. I'm talking about a superstar. If the Lakers can't swing a deal for a superstar, these could be very mediocre, uninspired years of LeBron at the end of his career. And LeBron's only going to get worse, I would assume. I mean, look, maybe next year because he doesn't have to play in the NBA playoffs, the NBA finals. He comes back refreshed and revenge factor. And if he has Anthony Davis playing next to him, it's a different LeBron, let's face it. But I don't know. There's a part of this season that really feels like Michael Jordan Wizards time. Michael Jordan Wizards time. Michael Jordan Wizards time. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter as well. DA on CBS. Can we just also note that I'm not here to crush the selection committee because I think that that's kind of trite and cliche and tired. I mean, everybody kind of floats into college basketball in early March and then suddenly has all these hot takes about where people should be seated, where teams got screwed, etc. But it definitely feels like the selection committee was overly kind to the Kansas Jayhawks. You realize that if KU as a 4 seed gets through the first 2 rounds, they'll play in Kansas City in the Sweet 16 and Elite 8? Kansas City is 45 minutes away from Lawrence. Kansas City is the major metropolis that has as many KU alumni as anywhere. It's a Kansas town, especially a Kansas Jayhawks town. If they play at the Sprint Center, which is basically where Kansas the Kansas basketball team plays plenty of home games, essentially a 4 seed gets a home game in the Sweet 16 and the Elite 8. And Kansas has been so bumpy and so rocky, and Bill Self is under fire with the NCAA FBI investigation, and they've been without their star players, and they didn't win the Big 12 regular season championship for the first time in like the play is, since the Paleozoic era. They didn't win the conference championship tournament. This is a Kansas team that didn't deserve to have any favors done for it, and it got a 4 seed and playing through the Kansas City pod. I said, that is some home cooking. Boy, talk about thank you very much, ma'am. I'll take it. This year, out of all years, the Jayhawks earned a trip if they get through the first 2 games to Kansas City. Now, maybe they don't even get that far because, again, they're kind of a broken. They're a team that has a lot of flaws. They're a flawed team. I won't say they're a broken team. They're a flawed team. But, boy, that. There's always been this hint in the Big 12 that the Big 12 gives as many favors as possible to Texas football and to Kansas basketball. That those are the golden children and that the league gives them preferential treatment and that it filters down to officiating and site decisions and things like that. If you're in the Big 12 this year and you look at Kansas going through Kansas City after this year, where this is their most down year in 20 years, you've got to be saying, look, that's all the evidence we need that they got people in high places helping them out here. When we come back here on the show, we'll do some bracketology. Reed Forgrave, CBSSports.com, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Don't like something? Get it out.
Get him 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 out.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
21 minutes past the hour. Thanks so much for being with us. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Remember, you can listen to us on your phone. Listen to us. Use the CBS Sports app, the TuneIn, the radio.com app, rather, or Apple Music. And you can also watch us at watchda.com. The simulcast is rolling right along. Watchda.com, available on any device. Joining us here on the show is our good friend from CBS Sports and CBSSports.com, college basketball insider Reed Forgrave. It's the most beautiful time of the year for Reed. Reed, good morning.
Ah, I love this.
such a great time of year.
Such.
To watch basketball, right, for the next, right, like, 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, it's vasectomy time for many males across America here. Just
Timber down now, boy. Come on.
That's right. Pop up your legs and just enjoy some beer and some food and some watch some basketball. Hey, I want to start with Tennessee because the Tennessee Volunteers have been a really interesting team this season. They've been very highly ranked, but a lot of people say, do we really believe them? And now they get a 2 seed. However, as you've noted, this is a team that could potentially be playing Cincinnati in Columbus just down the road from the Bearcats. How tough a draw is this for a Tennessee team that just got routed by 20 yesterday by Auburn?
Yeah, got absolutely smoked. And I think part of that would have been because the day before they had really gotten up for Kentucky, and that was the game that had the emotion to it, the game that, I mean, obviously they cared about the SEC championship game, but when you play Kentucky in the semis, I think that means a little bit more, especially when they had this history this season. But, yeah, I think Kentucky got probably the worst draw of the tournament.
You're talking about Tennessee.
Tennessee. Can I say Kentucky? I'm sorry. Tennessee got, I think, the worst draw of the tournament. Because, look, if they had won, if they had beaten Auburn, they probably would have been a 1 seed. That's what the committee said. To be able to have to play Cincinnati, who really has the resume of a 5 seed, and to do that in Columbus, I think is absolutely brutal. They certainly can win and probably will win. I think they'll be favored by a couple points. This Tennessee team is legit. I remember seeing them last year at the Battle for Atlantis in around Thanksgiving and being like, you know, no one was talking about Tennessee at that point. They were just like picked to finish like 11th or 12th in the SEC. And you saw what has come to fruition this year. The team that just plays hard. They play harder than anyone else. I love this team. I like this Tennessee team a lot. They could absolutely make the Final Four. But I do think that is a really unfortunate draw. You get past Cincinnati, though, and I do think they have probably an easier road to the Elite Eight. The idea of them going up against Virginia in the Elite Eight, I think, would be an absolutely fascinating matchup. But, assuming Cincinnati beats Iowa, which I think is a pretty fair assumption the way that Iowa's been the past month and a half, that's a really tough draw in the round of 32.
Reed Forgrave, CBS Sports, joins us to look at the brackets. Villanova, defending national champions, only get a 6 seed. Did you feel like they were disrespected?
No! I mean, they lost to Furman, they lost to Penn, they lost to something. Like, Jay Wright has had to, you know, reinvent this team on the fly. This is always going to be somewhat of a rebuilding year for Villanova. But the Big East is just, it's crap this year. It's awesome that they won the Big East and won the Big East tournament. Like, that's worth something. It's worth a banner, I suppose. But this team just, they didn't have the resume all year. I'm not going to say that they don't have a chance to do anything, but I think this is Jay Wright's weakest team in the past, 5 years, certainly.
LSU is without Will Wade, and so the question is, do they lose in their first game against Yale, or do you punch them out of the round of 32? Because there's no way without their coach they're going to make the second weekend, is there?
I mean, probably not. Like, NCAA tournament's such a weird beast, right? Like, my wife, who knows, like, I asked her a few years ago, she's filling out a bracket. I'm like, hey, who's your favorite college basketball player this season? She goes, I want to say Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That's her extent of college basketball knowledge. And she beat me in the bracket that year. So the bracket is always weird. I am not going to pick LSU to make it past. I mean, I think Yale could give them trouble. I think the idea of either Belmont or Maryland in that second round could give them trouble. But LSU is really talented. They're one of the more talented teams in the country. You never know when a team is playing with that sort of emotion, when they are pissed off with the world and they feel wrong. Even though they were probably the ones that did the wrong things, you can paint that us against the world, and you just never know what would happen. I mean, the idea of teams like LSU or Auburn or Kansas or any of these FBI teams making the Final Four is the worst nightmare for the NCAA. Just the bad press that would inevitably come out of it would be awful for the NCAA. But these teams can take that us against the world mentality, especially a team that has as much NBA players as LSU has, and really play it to their advantage. Am I going to put them in the Sweet 16? I actually haven't completed my bracket yet. Probably not. Probably going to take either Maryland or Belmont. I'm kind of leaning Belmont, to be honest. But, that's a team that they have Final Four talent written all over them. You just don't know how these things play out when the emotions of the moment and the emotions of what happened over the past, over the past few weeks, how that plays into things.
It could be the most deliciously NCAA thing ever. A team with its coach suspended goes to the Final Four.
Reed Ford. Oh, my God. I'm like wondering if we can get an all, I don't know how that bracket works out, but if we can get like an all FBI Final Four, right? Like, worst nightmare, worst nightmare.
Reed Forgrave joins us this morning here on the show. So Ja Morant is either the most exciting player in college basketball, the second one behind Zion Williamson. He is part of a 12 seed, the Murray State Racers, and 12s are always good for one per year as a 5-12 upset. But is Ja Morant good enough to give Murray State a little bit of juice and a run through March, or is he just a great player on a flawed team?
He's certainly a flawed team. They don't do much outside of Ja Morant, but Ja Morant is that good. Like, he ranks. So just to give you like a sense of how much he means to this team, he ranks third in the country, 5,000 basketball players in usage. He is this team. Like that is who Murray State is. But the type of numbers that he's putting up, averaging 25 and 10, he's certainly a top three pick, maybe the number two pick after Zion. He's the type of guy who can put a team on his back. When I look at them playing Marquette in that first round, Marcus Howard is awesome. Is Marcus Howard at 100%? Is he healthy? We don't know that for sure. Marquette can really shoot it, but they've really struggled the past few weeks. So I actually have in my bracket, I think Murray State could make a run to the Sweet 16. I certainly have them over Marquette. I think that is one of those 5-12 matchups that's going to be really, really, a really, really trendy pick over the next few days.
The Pac-12 was such a disgrace all season long. But now people are saying Oregon is a scary team because of the way that they ended the season in the Pac-12 tournament. Is there a scary or dangerous Pac-12 team in your mind?
No. No, not at all. I mean, Mike Hopkins is doing good things at Washington. They got a nice defense. They're also a team that had some really bad losses. Like, they lost to Cal. Cal's one of the worst high-major teams in the country. I get that bad games happen. But, yeah, I mean, Pac-12 to me is essentially a mid-major conference this year. The lack of talent from, top to bottom, it just isn't there. So, hey, they won the Pac-12 tournament. They won 8 games in a row. Cool. Belmont's won like 100 games in a row. Like, there are other teams in mid-major conferences that have won a ton of games in a row that I'd pick over Oregon any day.
So, Wofford's really good, and people think of Wofford as the Cinderella low major, but they got a 7 seed yesterday, and they won a really tough SoCon, and they played their power conference opponents really tough. Is it possible that Kentucky gets a tough draw with Wofford in that second game, or did you think that Kentucky, there's nothing really to gripe about where Calipari usually gripes about his road?
Calipari doesn't gripe? What are you talking about, man? He doesn't gripe? He never gripes. He's got to... Yeah. My initial reaction when I looked at that was Kentucky's going to overwhelm Wofford just with size and skill, frankly. But then you look a little bit deeper. First of all, there's no guarantee that Kentucky will play Wofford. They might play Seton Hall, who they lost to earlier this year. Miles Powell is an absolute stud. I think he could give Kentucky all sorts of problems. But the depth and the size of Kentucky is so much better. Wofford is just a completely different team. They're one of the best shooting teams in the country. They rank second out of 353 Division I teams in three-point shooting percentage. What is the way that much more talented teams tend to lose to less talented teams in the NCAA tournament? Well, one of the teams shoots 50% from three and takes 25 or 33. Like, that's how it happens. So, yeah, I think... Kentucky's a better team. Kentucky should win. But, in a 40-minute game in a single elimination tournament, weird things happen. Kentucky's hasn't been the most consistent team this year. Like, if you look at them the first half, it's almost like they have two seasons built into one. I think they are much better in the second half of the season than they were in the first. But, they're not the world's greatest shooting team. And they certainly have some flaws. That said, I'm not sure if I'm going to pick them to go to the Final Four, but I have Kentucky in my Elite Eight because I just want UNC Kentucky. I think would be an absolutely awesome game. I'm looking forward to that. And I know people are going to yell at me for saying this, but give me Duke North Carolina in the title game. We've never seen that before. Both those teams deserve it. They're both good enough. They're tired enough. They do it in completely different ways. I was in Chapel Hill for their game a week or two ago, and it was on fire. It was just an absolutely awesome atmosphere. So give me part four of that rivalry. Everyone's going to hate that, but come on. I think there's nothing better in college basketball than two of the most prestigious programs going for it in the last game of the year.
We will wrap up with a couple of questions on the number one seed, so about 30 seconds apiece. Number one, do you feel like Gonzaga is the shakiest one seed?
Probably. I know some people would say Virginia because of last year, because of the idea that they limit possessions. But no, to me, I think Gonzaga's awesome. Could win it all. But let's be honest, they haven't played anyone the past couple months when they just go into conference play. BYU's fine. San Francisco's fine. St. Mary's ended up losing to them, not just losing them, but losing to them significantly in the WCC tournament. Yeah, I'd say Gonzaga would probably be the one seed that I'd be considered shakiest. But I do think it's a pretty strong one seed line this year.
And finally, if Zion plays like he did in the ACC title game, can anybody beat Duke? Or I'm sorry, in the ACC tournament, can anybody beat Duke?
Nope. I mean, certainly somebody can. And Duke is one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the country. And just like I was saying, like, the way to beat a more talented team is to bang home a lot of threes. But they are, I think, an order of magnitude more talented than everyone else out there, including Kentucky, including Gonzaga, including, North Carolina. I think Duke has all the talent. They don't have all the experience. I'm rooting for it. I want Zion in the title game. I think that would be good for college basketball. Like, when a player can become a first-name-only player in college basketball, a sport that is often considered a niche sport, Zion Williamson is the household name. Give that to me for April 8th in my city of Minneapolis, right down the road from me in the title game.
He covers the NBA. He covered the NBA draft. He covers college basketball. He does it all for CBSSports.com. Reed Forgrave, follow him on Twitter for the latest during the college basketball March Madness run over the next month. Reed, it's always good to be with you, buddy. Thanks so much.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Reed Forgrave joining us from CBSSports.com. When we come back here on the show, we've got your cut line, the story that did not make the cut, and you'll definitely want to relive as part of our epic fail, Morass not knowing which animals have hooves.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Good value, big upside.
I do love the Doc. I do.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And a fine Monday morning to you, everybody. You can always watch the show on your phone or any device at watchda.com. The best of video clips available on YouTube for your viewing pleasure and on our Facebook page every single day following the show. Our toll-free line is brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Go to geico.com. In 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. It has been brought to my attention that Jody Mack, while filling in for me last week, actually addressed the Mack attack. And so I believe perhaps tomorrow on the show we'll replay Jody Mack addressing his Mack attack.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's exciting. Also, it has been brought to my attention from the workaholic D-aliens that are always looking out for me and for the show that we became a subject on Reddit over the weekend. And so I had a few snapshots of the Reddit thread, again, used by users across the internet space that don't know everything about the DA show, that know some things about the DA show, that don't know anything about the DA show. And some of the thread comments are incredible, just incredible. Tomorrow's a really stacked show, so maybe we'll rack that on Wednesday, but I do want to read through a Reddit thread about this show. It's, from what I've seen, it is just special. Truly special. So it's a big, big week here on the DA. It is time for our Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. David in Boca asks, DA, Ryan Fitzpatrick, are you kidding me? Do you think the Dolphins are trying to tank? That's your Ask the Pros question of the day. The Dolphins signing Ryan Fitzpatrick over the weekend. The answer is yes. The answer is yes, the Dolphins are trying to lose this year. Under Stephen Ross, the Dolphins have kind of been directionless. And I think Stephen Ross, having spent all of that money, a big player in finance, a big player in real estate, I think Stephen Ross is getting tired of being kind of a joke of a franchise. And let's face it, it is kind of crazy to think about right now, but once upon a time, the Dolphins were a model NFL organization. Again, this seems crazy because it's probably been 30 years since you could really say that. Maybe longer, maybe 35 years. But once upon a time, it was stability. It was Don Shula. It was great coaching and either great defense or great quarterbacking, a great run game. And they were something to be appreciated and copied. And the Dolphins have been every sort of mediocre or worse for the better part of 30 years. And so I think Stephen Ross has given the heads up to the front office. Rip it all up. We got a new coach. We need new players. We need a quarterback. And so, let's face it, Ryan Fitzpatrick is worse than Ryan Tannehill. He is. Tannehill's not great, but Fitzpatrick is worse. They downgraded on quarterback this upcoming season. They're clearly not trying to win. And I don't think they're going to try to draft a quarterback this year. I think they're trying to tear it all up, going 2-14 this year, and then draft Justin Herbert or Tua next year in the draft, and then restart there. I think people within the organization kind of know. We're not trying to win this year. So the answer is yes, and if you asked me whether it makes sense, I would say that answer is yes as well. The way that they've been trying to do it, stay competitive, try to build a winner, has just not worked. Eke out 9 wins. It doesn't work, especially in that division. The most fascinating question to me of the NFL over the next 5 years is, who's going to fill the void when Tom Brady retires in the AFC East? Because some other team's going to have to be decent. I mean, I don't think after Brady retires, the Patriots have another 10 years of winning that division with some other quarterback. So is it going to be the Bills who drafted Josh Allen? Is it going to be the Jets with Sam Darnold? Or is it going to be the Dolphins with whoever they end up getting? And whoever sets themselves up best for 3 years from now has a shot. Right now, they don't. Let's get to your cut line, the stories that did not make the cut.
These stories were left out by the selection committee. Cut from their high school team. The news that didn't make the show. It's The Cut Line.
Haloti Ngata retires from the NFL. And it's kind of crazy to think about Haloti Ngata being old enough to retire from the NFL. But this dude was a beast in the middle of his career. 13 years in the NFL. He's now 35 years old. Went to the Pro Bowl 5 times. He won a Super Bowl with the Ravens a couple of years ago. That was the Joe Flacco year. And man, for interior defensive linemen who don't get a lot of run, Haloti Ngata was an absolute monster. 6'4", 340. Think about that size. 6'4", 340. And he's not an NFL Hall of Famer, but he's a Ravens Ring of Honor guy. I think he's quality that, he's that type of quality. And what a tremendous player he was for so long, and what a monster he was in the middle. And for Haloti Ngata, that's a great career. Not a good career, that's a great career.
So sorry, you've been cut.
Thank you. Goodbye.
And how about Giannis Antetokounmpo going for 52 points in a loss yesterday afternoon, and his facial, he delivered on Ben Simmons. And then you could see him scream at Ben that he's soft. Simmons is soft. Was so aggressive, so disrespectful. I loved it. I want to see the Greek Freak play in important playoff games. I want to see that Bucks team play deep into the NBA postseason, because watching Giannis do everything is just incredible. It really is. It is just incredible. And I credit the Sixers for finding a way to win that game. Incredible shot at the end by Lou Williams. But my God, you had Giannis go for 52 and just do it every different way possible. Guy is nasty.
So sorry, you've been cut.
Thank you. Goodbye.
And that is your cut in line this morning. Earlier in the day, earlier in the show, I brought up how the Denver Broncos were a horse. Mraz didn't know that a Bronco is a horse. He thought they were a bull. And then we got into a conversation about hooves. And Mraz proved to know even less about animal anatomy. And obviously, this has to be your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Have you ever seen their mascot on the sideline? It's a big horse.
Yeah, but I mean, think about how bulky a bull costume would be.
Also, do you not realize a bull has a hoof, too?
People get fat sometimes. What are you going to do?
I don't think they do,
no?
Dude.
What do you think they have? Like a hand? Think they got a couple of fingers?
No, I don't. I think you call it a paw.
A paw. You think...
It's not a hoof.
You think cows and bulls have paws? You think they're like tiger paws?
Or feet?
You think they got feet?
They don't have hooves. Hooves are for horses only.
Hooves are for horses only?
Yes.
That's wrong. A pig has a hoof?
A pig has a snout. You know that.
Yeah, you know I'm not into that.
What's on their feet? What's on their legs?
They're not hooves.
What are they?
Paws.
They're paws.
Paw, what do you call it?
The paw.
Pig has paws.
A pig paw.
A pig paw, yeah. Like a pig pen, a pig paw.
Pig paw.
Yeah, hoof. A deer might have a hoof.
A deer definitely has a hoof.
But they're like mini horses.
Big hoof. The hoof got caught in the grill. I gotta hack it off. Ooh, come on, it's a sin. You're
going
to leave it there,
you know. Okay. A bull is too big to have a hoof.
Yeah, what do you think a cow has?
I think a cow has a paw.
You think a cow has a paw?
Yeah.
Did I ever milk a cow?
How do you?
She used to have to milk the cows in the rain.
And they tell them to move over.
What do you think, like, hoof soup is? Haven't you ever heard of...
Who would eat that?
Doesn't sound delicious.
It's a thing.
Then why do horses need shoes?
What do you mean?
They wear shoes. Those are for hooves. You see bull shoes?
You think horses wear shoes because of their hooves?
Horseshoes are a real thing. That's what the Colt logo is.
Okay.
And it covers the hoof.
No, Michael.
People with paws or dogs or any animals with paws don't need shoes unless you're putting them in a boutique. It's to cover the hoof.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
They got hooves over here. I don't know. Mraz is amazing because he walks through life every single day and holds down two jobs, incredibly, and has absolutely no idea about some of the most basic fundamental information that we have in the world.
I mean, I know now. Bronco's a horse and a horse has hooves. Those are for hooves.
Hey, over here, they're for hooves.
For hooves.
Hey, they're for hooves. Jacob tweets, Mraz's rant on Broncos being bulls is incredible. I almost spit out my morning coffee. I'm thinking this is a definite early candidate for one of the 12 DAs of Christmas. Hashtag Baker Mazel. Hashtag little wet, little drippy.
I'm a little wet, little drippy.
Jacob, you and I are on the same page. Great minds think alike. I'm saying, as it's happening, this is a 12 DA.
By the way, early candidate, we already have 15 in the hopper. Why not just call them the Denver Horses?
They are for hooves.
Mike
tweets, hey Mraz, do the bulls in Spain run on Jordans? Hashtag, I'm talking about the running of the bulls, by the way. John tweets, don't blow Mraz's mind and tell him that the Colts are horses too. I think Mraz knows Colts are horses.
I knew that, yes.
Just Broncos you thought were bulls.
Correct. Ponies as well, a horse. Yeah.
Alex tweets, Piggy Doodle Dandy is a drunk version of Alf. Hashtag, how many beers ago?
How many beers ago? Probably 1,000.
Pig is a snout. You know that.
You know that. And you know this, man.
Those are for hooves.
Hey, over here. Willie, get me my cat. I'm fricasseeing into the oven. Ha! I kill me.
Those are for hooves.
They're for hooves. Hey, Willie, where's the remote control? I'm trying to find Animal Planet to check out dinner. Ha! They're for hooves.
Those are for hooves.
Hey. Willie, do horses have hooves? They're for hooves.
Those are for hooves.
Hey. That'll do it for us this morning here on the show. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer of the DA Show. Thanks to Pete the Body Bellotti, playing hurt today on the Wheels of Steel. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan at WatchDA.com, finding Kirilou's lost wire. Nice job, bud. And thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headlines. Be good and be good to one another. We'll see you tomorrow for Trash Tuesday, everyone. I'm DA in the Mothership Disconnect.
Those are for hooves.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.